Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
We are off and running. And the reason that Doug isn't here in this spot today was because Doug was working early. Doug was co-hosting the Dan Patrick Show with Jason Smith earlier today here on Fox Sports Radio. And the guys, for their 3 hours of chatting, they got a chance to catch up with Rick Bucher, Fox Sports 1 NBA analyst. And I guess, Jonas, you could say, I thought this was, not that it was a foregone conclusion, but it seemed that everything was headed this way from what we're about to hear. But Rick Bucher provided the good news today to basketball fans and, heck, sports fans around the country with this news earlier today on the DP Show.
The reality is that while it hasn't been said, it's been decided. We're going to have games. It's just a matter of when we're going to have games and what it's going to look like. I would expect by the first week of June, we are going to get an official announcement. Maybe even the 1st of June.
That seems to be what we've heard over the last couple of weeks. And Jonas, to me, what solidified my thinking that the NBA was going to resume was what came out on Friday, where it was a survey that was sent out to the 30 teams in the NBA asking their preferences on a whole bunch of topics, whether it be the regular season, if it should be finished, whether it be the postseason, how many games they should actually play, even as far as if the playoffs are held or when the playoffs are held, how far should they go? There was never an option on that that said, should we play or shouldn't we play? I think that kind of gave us the idea that the NBA is going to be tipping it off at least some point to wrap up this season.
Yeah, and I don't think they have much of a choice, to be honest with you. I think the NBA, the second that these other sports started jumping out and figuring it out, the NBA feels like, and these other sports look like they're the odd man out. The NFL continued on. Obviously, they don't have actual games to worry about, but they had their draft. They started free agency. They continued on with their season. NASCAR has figured it out. The UFC figured it out. Golf is figuring out a solution for what they can do, and they're going to be back soon. And so I think the NBA looked around and said, Jesus, if they can hold a WrestleMania in an empty place over a two-day span, we need to figure out a way to get back on the court, because I saw a number that was out there that they stand to lose, what was it, $900 million of playoff revenue if they don't have an NBA playoffs this year. I don't think there's really any choice. I think they need to get back, and I think in some ways they've conveyed that to the players and the owners know it too.
I've never been a fan of them resuming the regular season games. I actually think if you look at the standings, everything's kind of set. That's just from where they left off in mid-March. But you mentioned the money aspect of it, and the regular season games is part of a contract as well that they have with local affiliates that they need to air about 70 games on the local markets broadcast. So those are fulfillments when you've only played 67 as a whole. And, you know, some teams played primetime games where there was no alternate local broadcast. So when you're the NBA, you're trying to fulfill those local market requests that you were contractually obligated to. You've got to finish those sort of things, which is pretty absurd because I just don't think that we need regular season games. But to your point about the money, that's another money aspect that the NBA is continuing. Now, as these games are going to be played, yesterday with Ephraim Salam on our Sunday show, I kind of laid out what I thought was most important and least important.
Netflix Sundays, right?
Yes, there it is. That's what it is. The most important thing, I think, and the NBA has always gone this way, and it's why a plan has taken so long, and it's why they were lagging behind, Jonas, because I think that they were the most, the health was at risk. They were also the league that had the player and players come down with the virus, where we're calling off games. Like, there was no other, they weren't shutting down spring training games, you know, 4 minutes before first pitch. In fact, spring training games were still going on that Thursday when the sports world was basically shutting down with college tournaments. But the NBA is basically like, all right, we're ending this. So I think it was imperative of the NBA to try to figure out what sort of plan they had, not only because of the optics of them having the one closing it down, but they're the ones who are most easily able to, I guess, give COVID-19 or coronavirus to another player because of the amount of contact. So while the NFL has been kind of almost footloose and fancy free with stuff, the NBA has been basically walking on eggshells with no good alternatives for the last 2 months.
And can I be honest? I think the UFC put them in a bad spot. I really do, because the UFC also has a broadcasting deal with ESPN. So they have a television deal with ESPN. And what I had heard from some people, and I don't know if this is confirmed, but this is what I heard, and it makes some sense. The reason why the UFC was so adamant upon returning and why they've put so many fights on in such close proximity to themselves is because they have to do a certain number of TV shows a year on ESPN. They've got to do a certain number of broadcasts, a certain number of events to fulfill the contract that they signed with ESPN. Well, it's the same network. You know, the NBA probably has a similar deal. You mentioned the local stuff with the 70 games that you've got to have. That's part of the TV deal. I think once the UFC went forward with this, the NBA looked around and said, well, there goes our it. Well, look, it's a pandemic. What do you want us to do? If ESPN could come to the NBA and say, what do you mean? The UFC figured it out. Yeah, but they're different. There's no social distance. No. These guys are drawing blood from each other willingly in the middle of a pandemic. If they can figure it out, why can't you guys? And I think that really put the pressure on the league.
How much of a difference is it, though, in when you have got the amount of clout that global superstars have? Like, who has the clout UFC? To really say, like, you know, I'm not going to fight. What, maybe two or three fighters that would be able to stand up where their word would carry weight?
Yeah, and most of them aren't fighting right now.
Sure, right. So you got a bunch of – so if we wanted to have the G League and pass it off as the NBA, maybe then it's a little different. But, you know, I do think that they're different. But to your point of, yeah, if you're gonna worry about contact – it's constant contact in a UFC fight a fight after fight after fight. And that then raises up questions for the NBA. I think that their optics, though, with the Utah Jazz stuff, and I'm so afraid to say the Rudy Gobert thing, because we just don't know. You know, we don't know if he was the first to have it, but we were the first ones to know that he had it. That their optics were, all right, we've got to be super careful for this. And the NBA, I mean, the NBA has acted a lot quicker on a lot of big issues. Heck, the Donald Sterling thing when he makes the comments that he made years back. I mean, they got him out of that ownership seat as quickly as possible. With this, they've just been kind of, I don't want to say lagging behind, but they've just been lagging behind others because I think that they're trying to figure out a way to make the delicious cake with a bunch of awful ingredients.
Look, that Rudy Gobert story was such a crock. I mean, you talk about a crock of garbage. Like, the idea that Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell, they're not even sure if they can coexist when they – remember one of those stories that came out? There's mm-hmm. Like, they're not sure they can coexist when they return. First of all, we're trying to figure out as a country whether or not we're allowed outside. You think we give a rip whether or not Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell are going to get along because we don't know who gave the coronavirus to who? What a non-story, but I digress, Dan.
I think it's interesting as well to go back for the 2+ months that it's been to show how much we did and didn't know about the coronavirus, because the video of Rudy Gobert touching the microphones as he did, and we are – I mean, people are just up in arms. I mean, I remind myself, I'm like, I said this, and I truly actually still believe it, but I probably said it really snarky, where I'm like, you know, there's a fine line to being a smart aleck and a dumb A, you know, or something like that, you know, or a smart aleck and a jerk.
Are you mocking your own voice with your own voice?
I think that was me. but I said that, but it shows of just where the thought process was that Rudy Gobert, you know, was giving it out to everyone, and Rudy Gobert gave it to a kid in Boston who got an autograph from him at a Celtics game, and it's like Rudy Gobert. But that's what it was in March, because we didn't know. We didn't know like what truly COVID-19 is. I don't even know if we really know now what it is, but things have just changed so much. But those, the point of saying all this, Jonas, was that the perception was there, and the perception is reality, and that's what the NBA had to deal with. I think that the NBA has also got some big time issues. If they're, I mean, you know, I know you've talked about it, and others have talked about the conversation of having the season start later, which could be a really good possibility for you know, for a season to start in December. Well, then why are you asking GMs if you want an NBA playoffs to go to November 1st? Because isn't that what you're trying to get away from? And I said to try to get this season in, you've got to get this thing in by Labor Day. You have to get it done before football season. Otherwise, you're going to get the questions that you didn't want answered. And it's I use the example of asking your partner if you were a better lover than her ex. Or and
what's wrong with that?
The point is, you don't want to know. And the NBA doesn't want to really know what it would be like if they took their prime product, their NBA finals, even in this sort of world that we're in, to put it up against an average NFL week. You don't want to know those numbers.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's
dead man walking.
like there is no way. And that's just that's a question that the NBA just doesn't want to deal with. So this whole start of the season thing, I think it was laid out in that survey, but there are some things in it that the NBA has to realize that, yeah, okay, I know we've been kind of late to this, but this is what's important to us. Ending by this point, ending by Labor Day, making sure everybody's healthy. And I think in getting in, you know, a full playoffs thing, which is something we can dive into later, but this is the position the NBA is in because perception is reality with that league.
Yeah, and also the understanding that nothing's going to be perfect, and at this point, you got to take what you get. It's not going to be perfect. It's not perfect for any league, but you take what you get. So the NBA, I mean, I remember LeBron James early on in the process. Man, I'm not playing if there's no fans there. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we'll fast forward that 10 weeks and take a look at the economy and tell me what you're ready to do. I mean, come on, man.
Yeah, look at that cardboard cutout of Rich Paul. You know, that's
it's better than the sex dolls in Korea. I'll say that.
Here's my question. If the Lakers are playing those games, do you have a cutout of Jack Nicholson? Like, do you put him there? Like,
oh, that's good.
Do each of the games have to be representative of who might be? Who might be at your game? That would be great.
You know what? Maybe that's something we need to start putting together for later on in the show. Which cardboard cutouts would be at certain arenas? All right. Okay. I think that might be a good idea for later on, Dan.
Oh, great right. stuff.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Covering Major League Baseball for Fox Sports and the MLB Network. Hey, John, happy Memorial Day. How are you?
Dan and Jonas, great to be with you. Sorry that I'm a little bit late here. I can stay as long as you need me now. My apologies on that, first of all. But great to be with you guys, and certainly sending our thoughts to all the families of all who died serving our country, and just best wishes to everybody here on this Memorial Day.
We have gone on a tangent, John, while we are awaiting you. And it, by the way, it's totally fine because we have gone down a Damian Miller rabbit hole of talking. I'm gonna just kind of pull this back out and ask John this question. John, is the greatest rivalry in sports, you can have your Michigan, Ohio States, you can have your Army Navies, it's gotta be baseball owners against the Players Union. Is that the greatest rivalry? Because our argument was basically they can't agree on anything ever. Is there an argument to put union against owners in Major League Baseball as sports best rivalry?
Well, I would say this, that baseball of our four major sports in this country has gone the longest without a labor stoppage.
This is kind of like Ohio State kicking Michigan's
tail. Lockout or strike since the early days of 95 when they were coming back after the strike was over. So that to me is one note of labor peace for the last really generation. But certainly there are some contentious moments now, but I really am going to remain optimistic that, and I know there's a big week coming up, I get that, for all the sports really, but especially baseball. I think that as long as there's an agreement by early next week that things will stay on schedule for the abbreviated season, and it does appear to me that there's at least understanding on the part of both sides to have a conversation tomorrow and at least begin begin talking about talking, which is certainly better than nothing. And I think that we're hopefully on our way to at least an interim agreement that gets the game back on the field this summer.
John, if somebody said to you, all right, you're just never allowed to watch soccer again. It's just like that's an impossible ask, right? Like, we would like you to not watch soccer again because you're a big soccer fan, correct?
I love soccer, yes.
Yeah, okay. So I love soccer, too. Italian soccer fan on my end because I have a good buddy of mine. His family's from Italy, so I was really into soccer. If somebody asked me certain things that just weren't possible, I would tell them ahead of time, listen, this is just not going to happen. When they come out and they say, hey, baseball players who have been playing the sport for 30 years, we're going to need you not to spit anymore. That's an impossible ask. Okay, so like of these things that have been thrown out there that they would like that we need to see, how many of these things are going to be realistically regulated that have been put on the table for what needs to happen in order for the league to come back?
Well, and that's a very fair question, Jonas. I think that do I believe that the first player who spits on the field will be ejected from the game and the season's going to stop? I would say that that is not probably going to happen, just as I'm watching this thing from a distance. I think similarly over the weekend, and watching as I have soccer games and goal celebrations, I'm sure that there has to be some variance and acknowledgement of a little bit of flexibility for the players on the field. Take German soccer, for example. There are some rhetorical inconsistencies, such as you're going to stay spaced out before the game starts, you're not going to shake hands with the opposition captain, and you're staying spaced out in all of the pregame warm-ups. But during the game, you're right up next to the opposition player in their face defending them, which is part of, I think, the way that we're all navigating this. When it's an appropriate and sensible risk to take, I think it's a different calculation than when it's not necessary. And so, if a person is, if they get a mouthful of dirt and sort of spit it out, they're probably entitled to do that, especially if they're a safe distance away from everybody else. We are all relearning what it means to be a responsible, safe, good citizen. And I think it's all about calculating risks that are acceptable and those that are unnecessary. And I think that that's really going to be the guiding principle of so many things involving the sports world right now.
John Morosi joining us here on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. I'm Dan Beyer. He's Jonas Knox sitting in for Doug. There's so much to get to, but I kind of want to piggyback off of some of that because we look at the NBA, John, and we see stuff of saying, well, this could change the NBA forever. They may just now continue to do stuff, whether it be something as major as starting the season or maybe just something minor with what they do with the bench and, I don't know, maybe a player checking in or something. Are there things in Major League Baseball like lineup card changes, stuff like that, that we now look back and be like, all right, that was kind of stupid. Like, we're not even going to do that anymore. Are there possibilities that there are changes to some of these things that we could see still staying in baseball?
Sure. I think we could see the DH becoming more standardized. I think that we were already moving towards a time in the game during the course of this decade where, but prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, I would have said that by 2027, 2028, that we would have a 32-team league, universal DH, tightened geographic divisions with, for example, the Mets and Yankees in the same division, the Angels and Dodgers same division. And this might be moving us closer to that, to fewer long-distance travel series, more of a tighter method of traveling, expanded playoffs. That was being discussed even before COVID-19 came around. And now this proposal, 7 playoff teams per league, with the top team getting a bye and then the remaining 6 teams playing in an abbreviated or sort of unique first-round series to get into the former division series round. I think those formats and those changes could be here to stay. Maybe expanded rosters even beyond what it is right now. Of course, it was going to go to 26 players this year. Maybe it goes up even higher to protect for the pitching. So I think a lot of those different changes could be in effect for baseball. Baseball in general, the way that it's played, there is not as much close contact sweating on each other as you would see in basketball. So I think that there are some socially distanced elements to baseball that help the sport It's also outdoors in the summertime, which could perhaps help the sport operate a bit more safely for the next several months than we could see during the wintertime. So many variables right now, but I think in general, baseball will take some strides to be, I think, a bit more flexible and maybe more tech savvy as well, just in the way they prepare for the games. But I think in general, those structural changes that we talk about so much, about divisional structure, postseason structure, DH or not, those are all suddenly on the table right now, and it wouldn't surprise me if the changes that are happening now become permanent.
John Pomerosi joining us here on Fox Sports Radio, whether it's MLB, NHL, soccer, Michigan football, you name it, he's the guy to go to. Dan Byer, Jonas Knox, in for Doug Gottlieb here on FSR. JP, I was thinking about this. In other sports, they've sort of, you know, come to terms with the idea that we may have empty stadiums. You know, in football, you think about teams that have a home field advantage, like a Seahawks or a New Orleans Saints. And if there's no fans in those stadiums, then all of a sudden that home field advantage isn't what it is with a full stadium. Is there any place in baseball where a team has a home field advantage because of the fan base? And I'm struggling to think of it. And with that being said, if that's the case, are no fans really going to make a difference for these players, other than the fact that the owners aren't going to get that revenue?
That's a great question in terms of the games itself. And obviously we've seen it through our television colleagues at FS1 with the Bundesliga the last couple weekends. There's been almost a negative home field advantage the first couple weekends of play resuming there in Germany. So I think there may be something said for that the routine of just maybe the distraction almost of still being home and managing life as we all are right now, when you don't have the home fans to support you and bring your focus back to the game or to the pitch, sometimes things maybe don't go as you expect they would, whereas when you're on the road, you already have that mentality of you're at the hotel and you're more of an in-rhythm situation than you are when you're at home. It's a really interesting story and storyline to watch unfold. I've always thought that at Fenway there's a real advantage just because of the uniqueness of the park. Yankee Stadium at times has had that. When it's loud and when the stadium's enclosed, Houston. I think some of the dome teams that have really strong fan support when it gets loud. I think Houston, probably of the domed cities that are playing well right now, comes to mind, where that's a real advantage. And interestingly, Tampa Bay, it's been said that because they have not had strong attendance, that it's been a hard place for teams to play because you go there and the intensity is dropped down so much from where you're normally used to playing The Rays have enjoyed an advantage from that perspective. So maybe now the Rays will be more neutral and be at a greater disadvantage because what used to be their advantage of the somewhat quiet atmosphere is no longer unique. So it really is baseball of the bizarre when it comes to how it's going to look and sound and feel. We'll hear more of the conversation around. I'm sure that when the strike zone, and we'll see automated or not, what that conversation is like. But the manager speaking to the home plate umpire about a concern about the strike zone, anybody in the ballpark, including maybe the microphones back home, will be able to pick up what the manager is saying. So a lot of unique baseball conversation will now perhaps be audible for all to hear at home as well.
You know, you talk about home field advantage, we laugh at the Rays. I'll just never forget Pittsburgh and the Reds in the play-in game to shake Johnny Cueto. So I know like there's a hope and you want them in there, but it does make a difference in that postseason, even in outdoor parks. I mean, it really
does.
And yeah, it totally does. Absolutely.
There's no question about it. And certainly, you know, somewhat ironically, we're coming off a World Series in which every game was won by the road team. But I do think you're right that over the game's history. Now, again, that was the first time that ever happened. But I do think over the game's history, we've seen, you think back to the Aaron Boone game, that was at home. The Mets rallies in the 86 World Series, of course, those were at home. So many of the unique moments that have happened in the game's history, the 11 World Series in St. Louis, once the Cardinals won Game 6, it was hard to imagine them losing Game 7. So I think you're right. The intensity of an October baseball game is really special, and to have it with no fans will be will be jarring. But I think we're all getting used to this new normal. And there's been the conversation, I know, again, with the Bundesliga, do you pipe in crowd noise for the fans at home to have that sense of normalcy? I think it's an open question that each network and each sport will handle on their own. I just think that we're also grateful to have the games back potentially, and whether it's something as somewhat trivial or interesting to talk about as spitting or not spitting on the field, I think we're going to see a real commitment on the part of players, as we've already seen in Germany, where I think that the players there are excited about wearing masks when they're not in the game? Probably not, but they'll do it because that's what's required to get back on the field and play. And we all want to do that so badly that I think that that's really on our own little granular level. If you're in a community where masks are being recommended, you do it because it's what in the best interest of public health, and that hopefully buys you a happier future for your community and for your town and families, and especially those that have suppressed immune systems. It's just, to me, I think we're all in this same method of thought together about we're all doing our part, and I think we're going to see that in the sports world, that while I'm sure people are not wild about the idea of wearing a mask, if that's what's mandated, you do it because that's what helps you get your game back on television and part of our cultural conversation. And I think it's all for the greater good, and I think that we're going to see a lot of leadership from the sports leagues in that way.
John, that's awesome. Palmarosi. John, now, before we let you, just a quick question. No fans in Ann Arbor for a Michigan game. Are you good with that? Because I know you live there in Ann Arbor. Are you a season ticket holder, and what does that mean to you moving forward?
I'm good with that because my wife works at the hospital here in Ann Arbor, and I don't want to see a super spreading event happen in this town. I mean, candidly, that's my answer. It really, you know, for me, you mentioned Italian soccer and the town of Bergamo was so hard hit, and I visited there. I went to a soccer game actually in Bergamo 10 years ago. That part of Italy in general is where my family came from generations ago. And so to know that it was a game at San Siro in Milano, that was one of the reasons how Bergamo became a hotspot of COVID-19 just a couple months ago, that to me, it kind of hits home. So if Michigan Stadium has to be empty, I say that's probably the right way to do things right now, and actually probably not even probably, definitely just listen to my wife, and I listen to her all the time on everything, but certainly when it comes to health, she's the one whose first name is doctor, and I'm just a sports broadcaster. So I listen to her advice, and she has said pretty continually since this all began, Michigan Stadium just should not have fans. It just doesn't make any sense for it to happen that way. So I think that at least until we have a vaccine, you know, hopefully in 2021. So I think that to me, I am totally cool with it. To having an empty stadium, if it gets the game back, I think it's great for universities to have that sense of normalcy. But I think we can all safely watch it from home and support from afar. Wear your sweatshirts and support your team that way. But I think that for us, I have no issue whatsoever with the stadium being empty here in the fall of 2020.
Quick one before we let you go. Do you think there is a lake in the UP that still has a piece of ice on it? It's Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
What are the possibilities that there is at least one lake with like a small piece of ice from the winter?
Well, yeah, up onto like Isle Royale, right? So even north of the UP. So if you go to the Keweenaw Peninsula, Dan, as you well know, with your Wisconsin roots, and you keep driving north, and then the water starts. There's an island way on there, an Isle Royale. I think probably by now it's no longer iced over. But we had snow here last month, and not like at the beginning of April, like in like April 25th. So I would say probably no more ice caps up there now. But it's Michigan, and it's this time of year, and so I would never really be surprised by anything. And by the way, speaking about Wisconsin, there's no high school baseball in Wisconsin, even in a year like this, in terms of like during the school year. Of course, this year is a year that's truly singular. But every year, as you know, the Wisconsin high school baseball season starts in the summer. They can't even play it during the school year because of the snow. So that's my beautiful friends in that great state of Wisconsin, Dan, which I love as well. That's how things roll there with high school baseball in Wisconsin.
Appreciate it, John. It's been fun.
He's the best.
Life in the upper Midwest. Appreciate it, John.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks so much.
Oh, great stuff. John Morosi covering baseball for Fox Sports.
He's the best.
MLB
There's nothing he doesn't know.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Yesterday, Peyton Manning and Tiger Woods got on the board with a big victory in the Match Part 2, the made-for-TV event that was to raise funds for COVID-19 relief, and they definitely accomplished that, raising $20 million. But Jonas, in a time where we are starving to watch live sports or to watch events that we don't know the outcome, yesterday's event that aired on Turner Sports, who's on TNT and TBS, was one that I thought was quite fulfilling for a lot of reasons, because you've got a golf fan like myself who's gonna watch the event, but you have the two biggest names in golf. You've got the two biggest names in football. You bring those worlds together with games that maybe weren't as polished as you would have hoped. And I thought that yesterday, and I'm always worried about this because I am a golf fan or I'm looking at it. I don't think that yesterday's golf event was catered towards me because I'm gonna watch it anyway. Maybe the week before, when you had the skins match between Dustin Johnson and Ricky Fowler and Rory McIlroy and Matthew Wolf, maybe that was more for the golf community. But I thought that this one was just for the sports fan and bringing the world together. So I'm curious on your thoughts on how yesterday's the match went, because I really thought that it went well and it really translated well on TV.
I thought it was by far and away one of the worst things I've seen on television in the last 6 months. I mean, I was disgusted by what I was watching. The Empire. You talk about an atrocious tournament. I mean, they disgraced the game of golf. Guys wearing shorts, golf cart cams. One guy splits his pants open, and then he's wearing like these baggy Zubas the rest of the tournament. I mean, it made me sick to my stomach. I couldn't stand the tournament. All kidding aside, I thought it was awesome. I really did, because it made somebody who doesn't know as much about golf as you do, it made somebody who doesn't relate to golf in the way that you do, because I've played a couple of times in my life. I've been to big tournaments, but it felt like something that I could wrap my arms around, because it felt simpler than a golf match that you normally watch on television. And we've had the pleasure to go to places like Torrey Pines for a couple of years, which is one of the most beautiful scenes I've ever seen. And when you see just sort of how relaxed some of those guys are when you see them in person and just being there and around the event, I wish that translated better to television. And I thought they hit a home run yesterday with it yesterday.
I know that the weather conditions weren't ideal, but I thought it, as I said, went off well. And I'm actually glad as a golf fan to hear you say that, because it isn't easy to put off, you know, or to pull off that sort of event. There are things that can get old. One of the things that they had in the skins game that you had the week before, where somebody was saying, there was a theme maybe on Twitter that said, well, these guys aren't playing well. It doesn't look like Dustin Johnson really cares. You also have to remember that when you're watching a golf tournament, you're watching it on TV, and it's usually majors, we're going to get a lot of coverage. U.S. Open will be on Fox Sports 1 and Fox Sports. So when Tiger tees off, you're seeing every shot that Tiger plays. But, Jonas, you're also seeing 20 to 30 other players maybe hit shots, and only the best of the best have each of their shots shown. So really, when you're watching golf, it is it's kind of a best of show every time, or it's a best of or worst of. They're not going to show you a mediocre shot for a guy who's 8 shots back of the lead. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They're going to give you the main characters, how that story develops. But in a golf tournament, there's 150 other players that are hitting shots that you never see. When you only have 4 players on the course, those are the only shots that you can focus on. So I actually thought it was kind of unfair to be like, well, man, these guys aren't playing, you know, good golf. It's not what we would have hoped. Well, those are the only 4 shots that you are watching. You can't just go to, you know, the 13th hole and watch somebody try to putt for eagle. It's one of the magic things that golf has. Fast forward to what we had with the match yesterday. What was so great about it was the awfulness of Tom Brady on the front nine. Like that's the sort of stuff that you want to see. Or just, you know, one of the takeaways from yesterday's event was, you know what, Tiger looks healthy. Tiger actually seemed to hit all of his shots. There were so many things that you could grab from this that maybe you didn't somewhere else, that I thought was so positive, because it was both good and both bad. And usually the bad is complained about, but it wasn't complained about yesterday.
You know what never goes out of style? Being relatable. if you can be relatable, that's always going to translate through the television or the radio or anywhere. If people watching or listening can feel like, hey, you know, we felt the same way too, or hey, we've been there too, that always is going to play well. And the fact that you had it was so flawed. Look, at some point, I mean, they had to have thought to themselves, and Charles Barkley made a comment about it during while it was happening. He was like, you know, it is raining pretty hard, guys. You know, it's not like this is just a couple of sprinkles. It was a downpour on these guys, and they stayed out there and they played. And if you're somebody who paid a certain amount of money for a tee time and it starts raining, you know that you're scrambling to get your shots in because you don't know how bad it's going to get, and you already paid for the course. So that was relatable. Tom Brady, a guy that preaches fitness, and a guy that's got his own fitness line and his medicine and all the other things to go along with it, and he's got this supermodel wife, and he's got all these millions of dollars and his 6 Super Bowl rings, and even Tom Brady can split his pants on national television just like everybody else. It was relatable. That's why it worked. And I just wonder if your golf moving forward, maybe you don't have to take every aspect of it, but maybe you look at a couple of tweaks and go, man, I don't know. Like, you know, maybe this is a way to be more inviting, because as it stands right now, and you know this, the laziest thing that's done by many people in sports media is, unless Tiger Woods in the tournament, I'm not even going to pay attention to it. And I've been guilty of that as well, too. You watch all of these tournaments. I just think there's something they could pull from it to make the television experience that much better for everybody involved.
You know, the relatable thing is so unique. And you know what I would like to see? And I think No Laying Up is a podcast, and they've got a huge following in golf, and I think that they've done this with a pro or two. But Jonas, to go to, let's just take my example, where I grew up, there were 2 golf courses in the close area of north central Wisconsin. There was the hometown course, Merrill Golf Club, or there was Trepp River Golf Course, which was in the country, which was between Merrill and Wausau, but it was in farmland. What I would love to see is to, for this, the sake of this example, for this purpose, to take those 4 players, or to take 2 of them and put whatever, if you want to take out Manning and Brady, whatever, put them on a course that we relate to. Like,
yeah,
there are so many players that play golf that will never play the caliber of golf course of Medalist Golf Club, like in Florida. It's a super elite private. It's where Tiger plays. When you get to the relatability of it, to see, wouldn't you love to see what Tiger Woods could shoot at your home course from the back tee? I mean, it may be,
God,
you know, like, you're talking, you know, 16 under par. But imagine, like, what something like that would do. And just of trying to be relatable, of going to a golf course, I don't know, in the middle of Missouri, you know, that costs you $20 to play 9 holes with a cart, and it's 36, you know, for 18, and go and play that. Now, it would take guys out of their comfort zone, but that is what relates to us. And those are the sort of ideas that I think that golf can lend to of just trying to be the cart thing. Like, I never thought in my wildest dreams when I was trying to think of, okay, first of all, I honestly thought that you would have hated it. I thought you would have, like, Jonas probably didn't like the broadcast.
No,
I'm curious
great
to hear what his thoughts were. But I'm surprised to hear you say, I loved the golf carts and I love them wearing shorts, because shorts are a big conversation on the PGA Tour, because players aren't allowed to wear shorts. You're not allowed to, when you play, you're not allowed to play to wear shorts. Practice rounds, you started to in events where you can wear shorts, but you're not going to play those in rounds. But to show that you would maybe be drawn in by seeing something like that, or maybe feel more relatable to it by seeing a golf cart, I think is something that the golf world needs to listen to.
Yeah, and look, the shorts thing, the reason why I'm so fascinated by it is because I can't wear shorts, because, Dan, I don't have the calves for it. Right? It's just... Look, I'm sorry, man. I've got it. Yeah, I look like, in shorts, I look like a flamingo with bad tattoos. It is not a good look, so I can't wear shorts. But I did notice that, and it was one of those things to where I thought, well, why wouldn't they let them do that during PGA play or during some of these other tournaments? It never mm-hmm. occurred to me that wasn't allowed. The golf cart cam, and Phil Mickelson's a great soundbite, and he's really turned himself into sort of a comedy act in his own, where he's hitting bombs and speaking of calves, he's talking about his massive calves. Like he's turned in a lot of that stuff later in his career over the past couple of years, where it's been really, really funny. But it's to your point, Tiger Woods, hey, Mr. Green Jacket, why don't you come out to my neck of the woods? Let's see how you do it, golf and stuff in Ventura. I mean, come on, man.
Yeah,
yeah, you can hit a 350-yard drive. I want you to hit that ball through the clown's mouth on the sixth hole in Ventura, and then you can tell me how good you are. But it just, I think until you walk the grounds and are around some of this, like we see the way that Augusta is presented on television, this is somebody who's not as much of a golf fan or knows as much about golf as you. When I see Augusta and the way it's presented, it's gorgeous. It reminds me, oh, it's April. Like that, like that's how I know that it is April, because just watching sports growing up, I always just sort of place things together in sequence of where they are. And so when I see Augusta National, I think, oh, it's April. I also look at it and it's got a very proper presentation. And a lot of golf is like that. It's very proper. It's very, you can't do this. You can't talk in the backswing. You need to be over here. Somebody holds up a sign and tells you when you can talk and when you can applaud and when you can't. And when you go to actual events, like we went to Torrey Pines, I mentioned, we went to the U.S. Open at Oakmont. Me being able to walk around and actually see it and see, oh, man, these people are actually more down to earth than they're given credit for. You got to see that on television yesterday, and I just don't think that you get that enough from golf, and I think that's where they can really strike.
I think so many people are used to seeing Tom Brady perfect as well. And to see him not be perfect and not be relatable was magnificent for so many. And him holding out, which, by the way, we were doing our show during that time, Ephraim and I, right before you and Brady Quinn go on, and I didn't have the sound on and I didn't see, and I thought it was for eagle. Usually when you hole out from a fairway, it's for eagle, which tells you how bad Tom Brady was playing that he had to hole out for birdie. But we've all been there when you're like, what is this for you? Well, this is for par, and I'm still 100 yards, you know, from the green. All of that was relatable, and it translated really well.
Yeah, no, it was an awesome event.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
He's Jonas Knox. I'm Dan Beyer. You can get Dave on Twitter at David J. Gascon. You can find Jonas at the Jonas Knox. I'm at Dan Beyer on Fox. So on Thursday, the NFL will vote on a variety of possible rule changes for the 2020 season, including the 4th-and-15 option that could replace the onside kick for a couple of times during a game if a team wanted so. What Jonas and I have done, not necessarily taking what the NFL is going to vote for, we would like to take a look at some other rules that we think that the NFL should take a look at Thursday when they are looking at new rules. So, Jonas, if you would like to propose some new rules that the NFL needs, you could start us off.
All right. So on the kickoff, Dan, I am a big fan of the kickoff. I know that they're trying to make it safer, but what ends up happening is now you're sort of eliminating some of the great careers. If you think about it, in today's NFL, there would be no Brian Mitchell. There would be no Vi Sikahema. There would be no Devin Hester. There would be no Eric Metcalf, Dan Beyer, because they're ruining special teams. So here's my proposal. If the kickoff goes out of the end zone, or if it's a touchback, the receiving team will get the ball at their own 40-yard line. I want more kickoffs.
Super touchback.
Yeah, I want more kickoffs, and so I want the punishment to be doubled out to the 40-yard line. That way teams are going to be willing to let other teams receive the kick and return it.
I had an Eric Metcalf caricature shirt, you know, with like we call them the big head shirts.
Yes.
I had an Eric Metcalf. It was half of my wardrobe in grade school and junior high. Well, we just called them big head, but the caricature shirts. Absolutely. I like that. I like it's thinking outside of the box.
By the way, I had a Ty Cobb shirt when I was a kid, and then when I got older, I realized, oh, he's a murderer. That's nice. Thanks, Mom.
And,
Thanks
yeah,
for that.
Yeah, and so much more to Ty Cobb's history.
Why don't you just give me a Ted Bundy shirt while you're at it?
Jeez. Oh, Ty Cobb.
Wow.
One of the worst. One of my changes that I would love to see in the National Football League, and it kind of is off the heels of the replay of pass interference. Jonas, I've said this a million times before. There is one penalty that should be able to be reviewed because it is plain as day. You need to be able to review face mask penalties. How it's missed when his guy head is turned around 180 degrees from where it should be on a play and a ref doesn't see it. Face mask penalties should be reviewed 15 yards. With Jonas, an addendum. If you touch their COVID-19 face mask, 30-yard penalty. There it is.
Yes.
There it is.
All right, good.
Right there. Yep.
All right.
30 yards. First down.
Now, would you also propose that they go back to where not every face mask should be 15 yards? There are the 5-yard variety and the 15-yard variety. Because I feel like when a guy gets called for a glancing grab of the face mask by accident and he gets penalized 15 yards, it feels a bit egregious.
It does. And I would be open to that. But again, a touching of the coronavirus face mask, that's an automatic 30.
All right, so Dan, here's another one I have for you. So you know in the NBA, when you hit a shot above the arc, meaning in closer proximity to the basket, it counts as 2 points. But when you hit a shot from behind the arc, it counts as 3 points. And the idea is we're rewarding you for a longer shot, okay? Mm-hmm. That's what the 3-point shot is. So then how come we don't reward field goals for more than just 3 points if they're beyond 50 yards?
This is so fantasy football.
I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you, Dan. Like, imagine this. Brandon McManus kicks a 63-yard field goal, and the Broncos win after they were trailing by 5. Come on!
I think for a fact a guy lost a fantasy football game because of a Jeff Prater 60-yard field goal. That he made, and he didn't realize that it was 4 points. And I'm also pretty sure when a team's just like, I don't know, let's just try 62-yarder. You know, and the guy's long of the year, they put it up, is from 46, you automatically, we've had a miss. But, yeah, I get that. Heck, that's what fantasy football does.
Yes.
You take stuff from video games, you end up, you know, trying to relate to the people who are watching. I'm all for that. Yeah, I'm 4 points for a 60-yarder?
Would hell
that
yeah.
be? Yeah.
I mean, you know what that means? The Bears would never win a game. Ever. Never win a game.
Oh, man. I'll tell you what, though. Good news for the Bears, though. According to my new rule, you'd see them a lot more on primetime TV. You want to know why?
Why is that?
I'm banning all NFC East matchups on primetime TV.
Oh, come on.
I got to go through another Eagles-Giants on primetime just because Philadelphia and New York want to watch it, my goodness. I know Dallas is America's team, but do they always have to play the Giants like to open the season on Sunday Night Football? My goodness. I am so done and have been for so long. NFC East primetime matchups, maybe winners for TV networks in those markets, they are absolute death to football fans not of those teams.
And now it's the Eagles that play at the Link, right? Lincoln Financial?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
I've never been to Lincoln Financial. The Eagles are on TV so much that I know the ins and outs of Lincoln Financial better than my own house. Like, I know where players come out. They are always on, seemingly. There's always, and we know the Cowboys, but then even the Redskins will be featured on some primetime games, like that awful primetime game they had on Monday Night Football when they lost to the Bears. Like, why were the Redskins in that spot? The Giants are constantly featured in primetime. So there's something to what it is that you're saying. Now, Dan, I think we can all agree on this, though. The dumbest rule in sports, and it continues to get overlooked, and I don't understand why. If an offensive player fumbles the football out of the end zone, not only do they put the ball back to the 20-yard line, but then he loses possession. So even if it's not recovered by the opposing team, they still get the ball, plus you give them 20 yards? What are we doing here? It doesn't make any sense to me.
So you would like to keep possession, go back to the spot of the play.
Yes, you keep possession, and then you go back and it's a touchback. You shouldn't be punished 20 yards and possession of the football. That doesn't make any sense, especially if the team never recovered it. You know, it doesn't make any sense to me, Dan.
And all end zones must have helmets in it. So if you are going to fumble out of the end zone, at least you would get to see the freshly painted helmet.
Okay.
Those are the new rules that should be for the NFL.
And you agree that the helmet that is in the end zone has to be the two-bar helmet from the
80s? Okay. Yeah, two-bar or just kind of the Emmitt Smith face mask.
I agree. I have no interest in seeing one of these elaborate, Bane-looking face masks. I want to see the Steve Largent two-bar face mask. And I don't think that's too much to ask. Dan Beyer, Jonas Knox in for Doug Gottlieb here on Fox Sports Radio. Get Dan on Twitter, at Dan Beyer on Fox. Up next, there is a move that is about to happen in the NFL, but is it really about to happen? We'll get to the bottom of it here on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.